Hey guys, it's Bruce. Welcome to Combo Courses Podcast. Every week we talk about open topics about IT, cybersecurity. This is from the perspective of somebody who's in this industry currently working as a GRC type person. But I've done IT in the past of all sorts. So let's get right into this. Let me see here. I'm setting everything up right now. All right, let's get on TikTok. Open topics means any kind of questions, any kind of comments. I'm going to be addressing them here. Completely open, whatever questions you have, whatever comments you have, I'm going to be talking about that specifically. So this is about you. And then later on, I expand on some of those topics that you guys bring up. I've found that this audience brings up some of the most relevant and important things that people need to know to excel in GRC and to get into IT and cybersecurity and GRC type stuff. So what I can do to start it off is just go to some of my comments that I have. I got so many comments on YouTube, on Facebook, on TikTok, everything. So I'm going to address some of those right now while we're getting ready. But this is going to be pretty much relaxed. So any questions that you have, feel free to jump right in. All right. I'm going to see how this Instagram thing goes too. So first, I'm not usually on Instagram, but I figured I'd try it out. I just don't have a real big audience on there. Let me see. I'm going to start off by answering some questions on YouTube. Let's see here. So here's my YouTube channel right here. And some comments. I get these, man, so many comments. It's really been a blessing to be on YouTube and get so many people who are interested in this kind of thing. Let's see here. So somebody said, I really like how you talk about cybersecurity topics. You make the subject matter simple to grasp and relatable. I try. Let me see. Love your voice and expertise. I have subscribed to learn and to share. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys. Really, really appreciate everybody's jumping on here. Let me see this one. Some of these I haven't read before, so I apologize if some people are like really be trolling me. So what can you do about it? You know what I mean? Somebody said, hey, do you have any training that covers cloud security compliance, such as Azure migration strategies and best practices for an ISO to look out to looking to help improve security score? I don't have anything about cloud, but what I might do eventually is link up with somebody. It's funny you should mention that because I would like to talk heavily about cloud at some point. Really, really interested in getting into cloud. The certification and all the basic things that need to be known about it. And I might hook up with somebody who's like a cloud professional and then make it like a course or a book about it or something like that. Just something I had in mind, but right now I don't have anything about cloud. Cloud technologies, cloud security has been more and more important in my career. Like in the past three jobs, it just keeps coming up because basically whether you're in private sector or government, everything's kind of been shifting over to cloud technologies because it's just cheaper. It's easier to work with, and it's just better to use, you know, than having all of the. And just so you guys know, for those who don't, just like a basic layman's understanding, that's all I have. So that's all I have to give you about cloud. But cloud technology is where computers are somewhere else other than the premises of where you work. Like, let's say you work in some big glass building, some facility somewhere, right? Normally, in the past, what you have, you still have it. You have like a comm closet, like a computer area where all the computers are, right? Comm closet or a networking center where they lock the door. It's a secure area and they have all racks and racks of servers, like blade servers all racked up, right? Well, it costs money, power, energy, physical protection, all that stuff costs money to have that very expensive equipment on premises. And then on top of that, you have to have routine maintenance. That's very costly, like especially if you have like, let's say Palo Alto Blade servers, or you have Cisco Blade servers. Choose your vendor, right? And they're all stacked up in this room. The room has to be cooled, which means you have to have air HVAC. So that's electricity, right? It's just very resource intensive to have all of that stuff in your premise, especially if you're trying to scale your business, because then that means you need more equipment and possibly a whole nother server room to facilitate all your equipment. So cloud technology, what it does is it puts a lot of all of the hassle that goes into having that physical equipment on your premises, in your facility, they put it in another place. Like it's either at Amazon, who has a gigantic warehouse just full of racks and racks of billions of dollars worth of servers that they're constantly maintaining somewhere. And Google has it. And then other places like Oracle and all kinds of other big corporations and small, medium organizations do cloud as well. But they have all those racks in a secure area. It's got HVAC, it's got power, it's got security. Everything's already there and they take care of it. All you need is a fat pipe of that can take the data back and forth from your site. In fact, sometimes you're just logging directly into the servers that are in their facilities, right? And that doesn't mean you can't still have some important equipment at your facility, but maybe you have way less, like 80% less, because all you have is a DNS server, a web server, and basic equipment that you guys, for whatever reason, you don't want to have it on a cloud server. Maybe it's legacy stuff that you have to have in-house, or maybe people have to touch it for whatever it is, or maybe it's classified and it has to be on-prem. But all the sensitive but unclassified information, all the stuff that can be publicly available, you know, your web servers, all that stuff can be at a cloud somewhere in Amazon. So that's what it is. It's all your equipment in somewhere else on the cloud. They call it cloud, but that's basically what it's. Your equipment is elsewhere on the internet that people log into it and have all of the resources they need elsewhere. The CPU power, the RAM, the storage, all that stuff is elsewhere, right? And all of us are using it all the time. Like if you've ever used Netflix or any kind of streaming service, if you've ever used any kind of storage service like cloud, Google Drive, all Google stuff is in cloud. Everything, basically, I would venture to guess 80 to 90% of what you use currently on a day-to-day basis is cloud-based, because it's just easier to scale it. It's easier to use it. It's just overall cheaper, especially if you want to scale pretty fast, meaning if you want to grow your business super fast, and you want to save some of the cost of having it on premises. So that's what cloud technology is. Now there's a lot more stuff that I'm not smart enough to really talk about, like some of the security, the in-depth technical security aspects. I can't really speak on that. But you have all kinds of stuff that goes into it. You know, from the federal's perspective, a big one is FedRAMP. FedRAMP is the method that the federal government protects cloud. They use Google and they use Amazon, but there's something that has to be done in order to make sure that data is protected. And that's where FedRAMP comes in. FedRAMP is just a process of protecting that cloud technology. And 90% of it is NIST 800, to be honest with you. So the stuff that I teach, that's the stuff that that they use. So that's cloud stuff. That's why it's important. And let me get right into some other questions. Again, this is just open topic. So if you guys are trying to get into cybersecurity, if you guys are trying to level up in cybersecurity, this is a great opportunity to talk to somebody who's been doing this for, I've been doing this in all aspects of this since 2000. I've been a Unix administrator. I've been a help desk guy. I was a cybersecurity analyst at one point. There's plenty of things I haven't done. I've never been a server admin. I've never done Active Directory. I, I've I've messed around with it, but I, you know, I've never been in a position where I did that. So I don't really know much about that kind of stuff. I've never done a lot of pen testing. I know enough about it to mess around with like Nmap or something, but I'm not a pen tester. Plenty of blind spots. I don't know everything. And that's the great thing about this field is you don't have to know everything. People think that you got to be some kind of genius, know everything. You don't. That's a misconception. Nobody knows everything. And if they think that they do, if they say that they do, they're just a narcissist. It's too much stuff to learn everything, right? It's just like a doctor saying that they know no doctor knows everything, no matter how many years of school they go to. You know, you've got brain surgeons, you've got family practice people, you've got different people who specialize on different parts of the body. And that's kind of like how IT is. Nobody knows everything. Everybody knows like one piece of it. And that's just how this field is. Okay, let me go through some more questions here since nobody's asking on TikTok, nobody's asking on YouTube just yet. It usually takes a while to warm up from people to come in here. So while we're doing that, while we're waiting, I'm going to answer some more questions on or read some more stuff on YouTube. Let me see. I've got tons of questions on YouTube. I used to be better about addressing each one of these, but I just haven't. I've been super busy lately, man. It's been crazy. I've been super busy at work and at home and everything. All right. So this next question or comment is saying, there is a timeline and a BPG is what you use. Okay. What is he talking about here? This is one's podcast I did about ACAS and DOD RMF IT risk management framework for DOD. And they said, you also have to use deviation guides. There are a lot of people who claim to know what they're talking about, but in reality, they don't have a clue. The organization in DISA, whoever component fall under, the organization is DISA, whoever components fall under, there is no cost or bandwidth lost because you use a Nessus. You use Nessus agents. Okay, this is the one we were talking about, ACAS stuff. This guy seems to know a lot about. It's funny that I'll get a lot of comments or people jumping in here, tell me I don't know what I'm talking about, but then they don't have a channel. They don't teach anybody. They're not saying nothing. They come in there just to bash me and then leave. But whatever, it's cool. Don't care. But if you have some constructive criticism, man, I'll have you on here. I mean, the whole purpose of this is to share knowledge, right? I don't know everything. I'm not claiming to know everything, right? I don't. I use Nessus on a regular basis. I have very little exposure to ACAS, which is Department of Defense's contract for Nessus right now, currently Nessus. So I don't know what other features go into ACAS. I just know Nessus. I know Tenable. That's it. So anyway, let's go on to some other. Okay, I got some people on TikTok asking me, saying some stuff here. So let's talk. LinkedIn user says, do you still offer refresher classes? I do. I have a course online on convocourses.net. You'll find a lot of my stuff. Some of it's free. There's discounted stuff. And mostly my expertise is in NIST 800. I've just been doing it a really long time. Can I speak a little bit on cybersecurity analyst stuff? I can. Can I talk in general about IT stuff? I can. I'm no expert on that stuff. I can say that I am an expert on NIST 800. And I've just been doing it a long time. I've got a lot of systems through ATO process, through the entire ATO process, and they're operating because I was there. And that's from several different agencies within the government. And I also have gotten accreditations for the private sector as well. So, I mean, I've just been doing it a long time. So my course focuses on you as a GRC person for federal government, and what, from your perspective, what do you need to do? It doesn't go into some of the philosophies of NIST 800, like like some people do. I'd go into like, what do you really need to know? Why is it framed like this? Where source documents do you need to go to? It's really good if you're an IT person who's been shoved into one of these risk management framework jobs at your that's what happens to a lot of us. or if you're brand new to this and you're trying to get into RMF for the government, either one of those is like, that's my core audience. Like if you're an expert on this and you could be teaching it, then you probably don't need my course. But if you're like intermediate, like you're coming back in, you need a refresher to see what's going on. And that's kind of my wheelhouse. That's the stuff that I really talk about. Let me see. I've got some questions here on TikTok. Somebody said, Bruce, I'm taking tech sales courses. I'm in career change now. Tech change courses. Actually sales guys in tech make a lot of money. If you get in a good position, I knew some guys in sales tech. What they'll do is, from what I've seen, here's how it usually works. So normally they'll take a sharp IT person and they're really deep in like it, whether it's cybersecurity or it could be like they're a programmer or they were a firewall person or a SIEM person or whatever, right? They were just really good at one thing, whatever it was. And then you go to a vendor. Like I'll give you a specific example, ArcSight. So ArcSight is an old security information event manager. It takes all logs and then it breaks those logs down so it's easier for a SOC analyst or cybersecurity analyst to go through to see if there's an incident or if they're being attacked or hacked or whatever. So ArcSight. So they'll take that, some of their products, right? So ArcSight at the time had like four or five different mainstream products. And then they'll teach you, the salesperson, everything about that product. You'll know how to log into it. You'll know what it does. You'll know all of the basic data of what that thing does, right? You're probably not going to be an expert at like operating it, but they'll teach you like the basics of how to operate it and all that. The basic things about it so you can sell that product. And then they would have meetings where they would meet with representatives from the government or from other B2B, other businesses. And then you would be selling those things. You'd be in front of a group of people trying to sell ArcSight, this ArcSight server to this group of possible buyers, right? So you're always doing meetings and picking up the phone to try to sell a service or a product. And what was really cool is some of those guys would make a percentage off the sale. It depends on the corporation, but I know that those ArcSight guys at the time, ArcSight now is different. Like it's a whole different, it's been bought like three times. I don't even know if they call it ArcSight anymore, by the way. I'm just giving you an example. But these ArcSight guys that I knew personally, they had a sales team and then they had a professional services team. And that what they told me, these guys told me was, and these, some of you guys became friends of mine. The professional services team, they would go out and make sure that everything's working. They would be for the people who already bought the product, and they would go out and make sure they would have to be really good experts on everything, how to fix it, how to break and fix it, how to build content on it, everything, right? They'd be experts on it. They could build it from scratch, everything. But the sales guys didn't really have to know that deep of knowledge. They needed to know the sticker price, how to sell it, stuff like that, right? They had all the sales jargon. They would come in. They would seem like experts to a new person, but they wouldn't know how to like, they wouldn't know the guts of it usually. They didn't have to. Anyway, so those sales guys on that ArcSight team, they would make a percentage of the sale of that. Now, those sales could be in the millions of dollars sometimes. So they would make like, if they had a big sale from this other B2B or the government, then everybody who was involved in that sales process would get a percentage of them. These guys were making bank. I mean, they'd get a, like a $22,000, $30,000 check or more. I mean, they wouldn't even tell me how much it was. It was a lot. Because sometimes I think that what they would also get was some stock or something, stock options. And not every company does this, but I'm just saying that that is a legit field to make money in, right? That's but they're going to expect you to know some stuff about that product or service that you're selling. Do you help getting a job? Yeah, I mean, I've helped a couple people get jobs. I've helped a couple people get jobs, and whether it's helping them fix their resume, guiding them in the right direction. Hell, I have job openings that I would send to people. Like if their resume fit where I was working, then I've personally taken their resume and said, hey, you guys should check out this person's resume, like at a place I was working or places that I previously worked at, and gotten those people jobs. So yes, I do help people get jobs from time to time. It depends. Like if you have zero experience, that's different. Like I just give you all I can do is give you advice on where to go, because you've got a long way to go. But if you have been in this IT space for some time, a year, like if you've been in IT for 1 year or hell 6 months, I could probably help you to do something. But if you have zero experience, and that's different, that's something to where you have to build that up. Let me see here. Got some people watching here. I don't know if I can answer this, but I'll take a crack at it. Somebody said, should we learn cloud, AWS, Azure, etc., and their services? Yes, you should. Learn as much as possible, get the certification. Cloud is hot. I would, Azure and AWS are probably the hottest vendors right now. That does change from time to time with the market winds. Depends on where the winds are blowing at the moment. But right now it's Azure and AWS. AWS and Azure in that order. It's anybody's game. They're like really, really competing. And you said you could get a SOC job using Sentinel or a vulnerability management in Defender for cloud. Yeah, so what you could do is, one thing I advise people to do if they're trying to get into cloud, some people ask me like, should I do cloud or should I do cybersecurity, which one? And I'm like, well, what you could do is specialize in both. Like what you could do, one option for you is to do cloud, right? And then specialize, like you, AWS, let me see if I can find it. AWS has this thing where it has different specialties. And I'm just using AWS as an example. There's other things you can do. But AWS is Amazon's cloud certification. AWS is a cloud service from Amazon, and they have a certification. And I want to show you guys what I'm talking about here. Just give me a second here, and I'll show my screen. And for those who are listening or on TikTok, you won't be able to see my screen unless you're watching me on YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook. But I will explain what I'm looking at. So I went to aws.amazon.com/certifications. Now, if you just go to Google or Bing and type in AWS certifications, you'll be able to find this. But it breaks down everything you need to know, the prices, the documentation that you need, AWS Marketplace products and all that. If you go on the certification page, it has a breakdown of the foundational cloud practitioner certification. And it's got a professional level certification where you can go into different specialties from there once you get the professional certification. And one of the specialties, which is what I'm trying to get to, is security. So you can, rather than trying to choose one, you can just, you know, go to the AWS cloud practitioner, build yourself up to the professional level cert, and then go into a specialization at some point, specialize in, say, security. And that one's still out there. But they also have advanced networking, machine learning, and then security. So that is what you could do. Just some, you know, just giving you some options out there that you could do. I think that when you take the AWS certification, they are expecting you to have some level of knowledge on computers. Like, you, if you're in a completely different career field and know nothing about IT, then that might be a problem. You're going to have to know something about IT. You're going to have some level of expertise. I'm going into the Air Force for cybersecurity after I graduate. So that's the path that I took. And it was very rewarding for me. Just to kind of give you my real world example, my real world experience as an Air Force guy. I went into the Air Force and I went as a 3POX1, which was a police officer. Actually, I was a weapons specialist. That's what I did. They later merged it to law enforcement or whatever, but I mean, that's neither here nor there. Who cares? But I was in physical security for like 4 years. And then I cross-trained is what we call it. Cross-rate is what the Navy calls it. I basically did a lateral change from my job as a physical security person, weapons specialist / law enforcement, and went into IT. At the time, we called it 3COX1, which is a computer operator. Now they call it something different. I don't even know what they call it anymore. But it's like a 3D something. I don't know. Anyway, so I went in and did that for about 3-4 years as an IT computer operator. And what we did was, what you'll find is in the Department of Defense, as a service member doing IT stuff, is you'll get a blend of many different things. So if you're in cybersecurity, you might mess around with firewalls. You might do information assurance, which is what I do right now on the outside, which pays crazy money, by the way. Risk management framework, that type of stuff. You got how to do documents, risk management, GRC, governance, risk, and compliance. They might have you doing CompSec, which was that's what they called it at the time, which was making sure that crypto keys are in line with the standards. They might have you do IPSs, IDSs, information intrusion detection devices, intrusion protection devices. What I'm trying to get at is they could have you do any number of these things. But the great thing about that is that you'll have so much exposure by the time you get out to so many different things that you'll have a real solid grasp of IT as a whole, a real solid grasp of protection of confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And what you'll understand the why behind everything. And when you put that kind of stuff on your resume, it's really competitive. It's really, really, it's not even fair, you know, to be honest, when you get out. And you don't want it to be fair. So that's, you know, congratulations. That's awesome that you chose that you got that path. There's a lot of money on the outside. You'll see towards the end of your career or middle of your career, people will be getting out with a certification or a degree and they'll be getting bank. And it'll be a huge temptation to get out early because there's just so many opportunities after you get to a certain level of experience and a certain level of certifications. What I will tell you is while you're in, get as many certifications as you can and as much experience as you can. Like when people are like, I don't want to fix the server. I don't want to fix these routers or switches. Man, jump in there. That's what I did. So I was a real go-getter. Like I wanted to learn it because I knew the value of it. And I knew this was worth a lot of money on the outside. So I was trying to, and I wasn't sure if I was going to stay in. So I was, anytime somebody was like, hey man, we need an extra person to go help us fix these Cisco routers, or we need somebody to help us do these KG95 crypto devices, or hey, we need somebody to go out in the field and connect this network. And I was like, yeah, me, I'll do it. And then I go out there and I get that experience and I mess stuff up and figure stuff out and sometimes be challenged, pushing myself to a limit. And it really helped me because I was able to put a lot of stuff put it to you this way. When I got out, most things weren't that big of a challenge for me. Like I got where they were going with things, even though I'd never have. And I remember I was working on some weapon system for a branch of the military. And I'd never seen or heard of this thing in my life, but all the components I was familiar with, most of the components. And when they explained it to me, I was like, oh, okay. So this connects to this, it's using TCP/IP. And so it has to be encrypted from here to here. And here's why. I got why everything worked. And so I was able to pick it up very quickly, you know? So the more exposure you have in the military, the better. And really that goes for everybody. The more exposure you have to different technologies, the better, because it's going to help you whenever you go to any other place. You'll just understand what they're trying to do and be able to pick it up very quickly. And that's kind of what happened right when I got out of the military. Now I'm kind of sedentary and been, you know, out of the technical space for a while. So I've been doing GRC stuff, mostly documentation, risk management framework type stuff like that. So I don't really have a lot of hands-on experience. I mean, it's just been a while since I've messed around. I mean, there are some things I mess around, like networking or whatever. Some new technology comes out and I'll mess around with it. But I've kind of, my skills are getting dulled, my technical skills. Let me see if I have anything else here. Appreciate all the questions, comments. Anything that you guys want to talk about is open topics. I'm going to read some more of my, if nobody has anything else, I'm going to go to YouTube and see if I can grab some more comments on here. I apologize. I've been getting so many people contacting me on every platform. It's really refreshing to see some people who are interested in this, people asking questions and all that kind of stuff. It's been amazing. So, okay, I got a couple things here. I wanna show you guys this comment somebody left here. This is about the military. So I did a couple videos about my experience in the military and what it did to help me out. And I did a video that did pretty good where I said, don't join the military to learn cybersecurity. And what really, there was a catch. I was saying, don't join the military for one reason, right? It was a great choice for me. It really changed my entire life. But don't join for one reason. Have more than one goal, right? And that's something you could change. You can make up your mind right now and say, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to establish my life. Like, have more than one reason, because when you do go in, you will be challenged. You will be challenged to the max. Like, you'll meet all walks of life of people. You'll meet all kinds of different cultures, and you might even be sent to a war zone. Like, you might be sent to some conflicts, and it's going to test who you are as a person. So don't go in. If you go in for a reason that's bigger than yourself, that's what I'm trying to say, then when you get challenged, you'll rise to the occasion. That's basically what I was trying to say. Don't go in for just, so there's some people go in just for college. And then when they get challenged, they're like, oh, I quit. What's going on here? And they start crying. And there's these little videos you see of people panicking and leaving or attacking their first shirt or their sergeant or whatever, because they just can't cut it. Right. They weren't ready mentally for it. They won't have the heart for it. It's not for everybody. All right. Somebody said, if you're looking for a, okay. Somebody said, short answer is yes. Join the Air Force. Amen to that. Yeah, it was very helpful. If you're looking for Air Force security, it's the 1D7X1D. That's what it is right there. That's what my man here, X Fan, is doing. XD. I want to see what this is. What is 1DX1D? Let me see. 1D7X1. So let's just go ahead and do a search for this. I want to see what this is. Let's go ahead and see what this is. I think I put an extra 4 in there. Let's delete that. Delete that. It's changed since I've been in. So, you know, I just don't know what they're doing these days. It's been a while. Somebody said, okay, it says a 1D 7X1D is a learning program in the Air Force that teaches about security operations. Security operation chases airmen prevent, detect, and repel cyber attacks to protect computer networks, online communications, and other national security systems. That's great. Yeah, this is very, very valuable on the outside, by the way. So that is what a 1D7X1D is. They oversee system setups, design, facility layouts, manage training programs, planning and organization for cyber support activities. This is really, really good stuff. And here's a whole site that's dedicated just to 1D7X1s, Cyber Defense Operations, AFSC. Nice. Yeah, this is a really good career path right here. Super hot. This is kind of what I'm doing right now. This kind of stuff right here. Incredible. So if you happen to be going into the military in the Air Force and looking for an AFSC, I would highly suggest the 1D7X1D because you're going to make some money on the outside. Let me see here. Other questions, comments, complaints. Somebody said, thanks, Bruce. I just found your channel and I appreciate all the great information you provide. I had a question. At this stage of my life in my 40s, I am looking for a job that's less stressful and more flexible. I've heard the ISO job allows for this flexibility and provides more time off compared to other cybersecurity roles. Is this true? I'm coming from a corporate role and I'm focusing on employment with the government. I've always been an extremely hard worker, but what do you think about working for the government compared to the private sector? Okay, I can answer this one. I can give you my opinion on this. I have a lot of exposure to this. I've been in this field for quite some time. So what they're asking is, they're in their 40s. They're kind of trying to calm down. They're not trying to be a hacker. They're not trying to do all this high stress environment type things. They're trying to just chill. And I'm definitely with them on that one. I definitely get that. I understand what they mean by that. Because I'm in that stage of my life where I'm not trying to do any kind of crazy stuff. In the beginning, I was trying to do as crazy as possible. Like, I was trying to do everything. I was so fun. I was like so excited to do. Now I'm just like, I got kids. Like, it's just a lot of energy. Towards the later parts of your life, you just want to chill. There's enough stuff going on. You've dealt with enough things. So you kind of just want to chill out, right? Your career is no longer the centerpiece of your life. Like, you're like, okay, I think the career could be set over here. Like, the center of my life is my kids, my family, my spouse, that's what I'm trying to do. My career is just helping me. And that's where my man is. Cybersecurity. And I know this is not a popular opinion, you know, this is not going to sell me any books. It can be very stressful, right? I'm going through this right now, especially GRC work. It can be. I'm a contractor, by the way. Let me give you some perspective. Right now, I'm in my 40s, almost 50s. I'm a contractor working on a huge contract with a government three-letter organization. As a contractor, you're going to get paid more, but they treat you different. They treat you like you're a servant. I don't know why, what's going on with people when they get a government role, the power goes to their head and I think the reason why is because they have some idea how much we get paid. And then also they can't be fired. So it gives them this sense of, and not all government employees are like this, but they get this sense of, you ever seen somebody flip out in a McDonald's and then attack the freaking person serving them the fries? they kind of have that attitude. I'm the customer. You do this and you do that, right? It's stuff like that. And I've been around enough government contracts to see this happen more than once. It's not an isolated event. It reminds me of when I was a cop. Some people, when they get that badge and that gun, authority, they can't handle authority, right? They're just not, they shouldn't be cops. And I met a lot of people like that that shouldn't be cops, and a lot of people that shouldn't be government employees, to be honest with you. It just goes to their head. They have a sense of power and a sense of superiority over you, and then they just kind of use it. And it's really bad, especially for some of these people who are narcissists. It's just really difficult to deal with that. So to answer your question, I would say, if you want to chill, be a government worker. If you're just trying to chill, you're going to get paid less. They got great benefits. But they're not going to, once you get in there, it's hard for them to let you go. And they don't do, depending on the position, and there are some government jobs that are really crazy and they're doing a lot of work, but there's a lot of them are kind of chilling. And what the government has started doing, the U.S. federal government has started doing, is a lot of their work, they're hiring other people like myself to do it. Like if they're doing cyber threat intelligence, they're hiring somebody else to do that. If they're doing cybersecurity analysts, they're hiring contractors to do that. If they're doing risk management framework, GRC, they're hiring us to do that. It's just cheaper for them to do that, and that's why they do it. That said, they do have employees who do GRC, who do cyber threat intelligence, who do firewalls, they do have those. What happens is you have a government worker and you have a contractor, and the contractor is treated like a servant because they're in a position where they know they can't be fired. And a lot of times they're our boss, they're our customer. So we got to, you know, I'm not going to say toe the line, but yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, that's what's happening. So I would say if you're trying to chill, cybersecurity and IT is still really good, but probably just go the government route. Private sector is kind of crazy. It's volatile. At any point they could get rid of your contract. You could lose your contract. They could lay you off. It's just volatile, right? It's just not, it's temporary. That's how most jobs are these days. It's not like the old days where they would retain you for 30 years and you could retire with that company. You know, it's just not like that anymore. So government, to answer your question, I would say if you're trying to chill, go with the government. Okay, I got some stuff on TikTok. The IT field was rough for a while, but I'm thankful that it's getting a bit better. Yeah, it depends on the position. Carson, I would say it really depends on the position. For me, some positions I've had have been pretty chill. I've been pretty laid back, chill. I'll give you a couple of examples. Like one, I was just doing policies. They just had me come in. They were paying me a whole bunch of money to come in and redo their policy. Right? They had to update their policies and procedures. And I took it and said, okay, how can we match this against ISO 27001, 27002? How can we make this align with this? And then they gave me everything. And then I started lining up everything with ISO 27001 and with their internal security controls. And that was just a chill job. They just, once the work was done, that was it. It was a short-term contract. That was one of the easiest jobs I've ever done. Another one that was pretty chill was I was a teacher, I was a trainer, and I was teaching risk management. Well, at the time it's called DICAP, which was an old version of DOD risk management framework. And I was teaching it. And I was telling, just like I'm doing here, I was telling people, okay, here's this control. Here's what you normally do. Here's this control. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do this process, this part of the process. And I did that with this small company. And that was one of the coolest jobs I had. It was a lot of travel, but it was pretty laid back. You know, they weren't like sweating me all the time. They just let me do my thing. There's been a couple other ones that were really cool. I worked with this company called Ball Aerospace. I really like them. They were a long term. They were one of the better companies I've ever worked for. Unfortunately, they were really far away. They're like in Denver, so I really couldn't do that for very long. They wanted me to like be there at that office up there in Denver somewhere. And that company was really good. Like, they were old school. People didn't leave. That people were there. Their average time of people staying there was like 15 years. That's just rare these days. That was one of the better companies. They were reasonable. They took care of their people. They had great benefits. They would have these dinners where people would come. They would invite people and spend money on their people. They had a real good training program. Ball Aerospace. I don't know if they're still doing that. It was many years ago, but man, that was one of the better companies. There was another company I worked for called SAIC. And they had one contract with the Air Force that was really good. And I worked there for like 5 years. That was a good group. Looking back on all the stuff I've done, that was one of the better organizations I worked for. Like, they treated people good. I didn't have like crazy hours. They weren't sweating me and blaming me for shit. That said, the other side of the coin is working for crazy ass narcissists who attack you on every meeting, who want to blame you for shit. That definitely does exist in cybersecurity. And I've had several jobs like that. And it's just old. It gets real old, real fast. And I could tell you about some of the past stuff I've gone through. I don't want to go into any of it right now because it's currently happening. So, it does get rough. Will the configuration management internship, will a configuration management internship benefit for cybersecurity? If so, how? I believe so. Configuration management is one of the more important parts of cybersecurity. Think of it like this. Configuration management deals with the baseline of an organization's IT systems. Baseline means, what's your hardware? What is your software? What kind of restrictions do we have on software and hardware? Like, do we just allow anybody to bring their computer from home and connect it to the network? Are there restrictions? How do we, once the system changes, how do we manage those changes? Do we do like a security impact analysis to make sure that it's not going to adversely impact the rest of our systems? It's not introducing any new vulnerabilities to our network. What are we doing? What is our process for maintaining our security posture? That is what configuration management is all about. And it, in a lot of ways, is the most challenging part of cybersecurity for larger organizations that I've seen. I've been to private sector, public sector. I've been to the heart of the DOD. I've been to three-letter organizations. I've been all international companies. And let me tell you something, one of the hardest things to manage is configuration management, because that's basically something people kind of throw in the background because they're like, oh, well, we need a pen test. We need a pen test to see, make sure the firewall's doing what it's, let's look at the firewall rules. Oh, we need better training. And that's important too. All that stuff's true. I'm not saying that stuff's not important, but one thing they kind of put aside a lot of times is configuration management. And it's actually the centerpiece of cybersecurity, because I've noticed organizations who have better configuration management are the ones who have the tightest security, because they're controlling what operating systems are in their environment. They have a tight control over the operating systems. They have a tight control over the applications that are allowed. They have a tight control over what the configurations are in the environment. The ones that have a very loosey-goosey kind of like, what, let's just let people do what they want. There's very little or no configuration management. It's terrifying chaos, especially when it's a high-level organization like a critical infrastructure organization or a financial institution or something like. It's terrifying to see an organization not have good configuration management. So configuration management is the heartbeat of cybersecurity. It's one of the most important things that you learn, that people learn last, and you're about to learn it first. So that's why it's super important. pay special attention to the overall process of configuration management. Pay attention to how they control the baseline of the organization, how they control what comes and goes, what's allowed to be on the network. Pay attention to stuff like that, because that is configuration management. And if you understand that, if you have a grasp of that, then everywhere you go, you'll start rating people by their configuration management. You'll be like, their configuration management's not very good. Oh, so that's what we're going to do. We're not going to do anything to control this software. I'm like, okay. Like, you don't control that as a cybersecurity person. You don't control. You're not the final person that says, yay, verily, we can and cannot do this. So configuration management is super, super important. And it's one of the last things people learn, unfortunately, but it's one of the first things we should all learn. So it's really, really good for your career. Make sure you annotate all that stuff. Put as much of that cool stuff on all the tools that you're going to use, all the processes you're going to use, all that stuff. Put that in your resume, because that's going to be very, very valuable to you. Somebody said, hey, sir, for someone who had no experience in IT, what path do you recommend I take? I usually tell people, Necco, to start where they are. I know I sound like a broken record, but I just think that that's probably the fastest path forward for you. And what I mean by that is, if you're a high school student, start at the high school. Like, they have a club there that's a bunch of geeks learning IT stuff, bringing their computer laptops in and hooking up system, making a gaming server or something like that. Maybe help the school staff and faculty secure the computers that are on the campus. You can do the same thing I'm telling you here if you're a college student. Start right now where you are, because you got to learn the common body of knowledge that comes with information technology. Let's say you're not in school, you're not in college, you're not in high school. Okay, cool. What you can do here is, what industry are you in? Are you in the retail sector? Are you in hotel restaurant management? Are you in whatever sector you're in? All have information technology. Talk to the guys who are setting up the network. Talk to the guys who are fixing the computers. Talk to them that are in the industry you're working with. Even if you're a retail sales clerk, or you're the person who's serving fries at McDonald's. Every place has an IT place. And that system, that point of sale device, by the way, also is it's an actual device on a network. So that device also has to have security on it. Somebody has to hook that thing up. Talk to the person who hooks that stuff up. Look for careers at your job. If you happen to have a job, look for careers that are in your company right now. Go on their careers page and look for careers. A lot of times they want to laterally move you. So especially if you're a really good worker and they don't want to lose you, because it's hard to find good people. So tell them, like, listen, boss, supervisor, I want to make a lateral change. I want to work. I'm a stock person in Walmart, but I want to work in the IT sector. Where can I start? Go to their career page and see the jobs there. Hell, hunt them down. If there's no careers there, hunt down the IT department and start asking them questions. A lot of times companies, organizations will have an internal program to grandfather to give on-the-job training to employees that they currently have, because they're trying to keep and retain good people. It's harder and harder to find good people who want to work, especially people interested in IT stuff. So that's what I would advise you to do. Start where you are and then start to build your common body of knowledge. Crack open a book. You have to start reading books. Now, you can, in the beginning, you might not know if you want to do this. So don't pay any money. Go to YouTube, start watching IT professionals. Look for people who are on the service desk right now. You might not even want to do this, right? And then if you're like, yep, I want to do this, right? This is something I want to do. It's going to help my family. It pays money. I want to level up. I'm going to do this. And then you start spending money, invest in yourself. Go to Amazon, buy some books on IT, basic information technology. Go to school. Go. People shit all over college, man. It's still important, especially if you're going to be an engineer. If you're going to be a technical person, it's still important to get as much knowledge into your mind as possible and start to learn it. And then Do hands-on work. Start building computers. Be obsessed with them enough to where you start learning how networks work, how servers are. So what is a server? How does it interact with computers? Learn the basics of everything you need to do. And then you can start graduating and specializing in certain things. After you have the common body of knowledge, you can specialize in GRC. You can specialize in, firewalls. You can specialize in software engineering if you want to do that. So that's what I would advise you to do. Start where you are and start building from there. Somebody said, what perspectives for cybersecurity with AI? What do I think about cybersecurity with AI? What form will they merge when they come together? What will happen when they merge together? I actually have a very positive view of what's happening with AI and cybersecurity. And the reason why is because there's too much data for us to sort through. In the last few jobs I've had, they just throw so much on our plate, and we're literally dealing with gigabytes and gigabytes of information, sometimes terabytes of information. And it's too hard for a human being to sort through all that stuff. Realistically, if we really want to secure these systems, we have to leverage our time with tools. Right now, I'm using so many tools to do my job, and I could not do my job without tools like Tenable, without tools like Splunk, without tools like, Archer, Jira. Like all of these tools we're using these tools to manage gigabytes of data, and a human being is not capable of absorbing and managing that much information. So we need artificial intelligence, especially with the direction we're going. As a cybersecurity person, and I would argue if you're any kind of analyst, if you're a data analyst, if you're anybody who's dealing with a lot of information, if you're a network engineer, if you're whatever, you're dealing with tons and tons of data. We can't do our job without these tools. It's just not possible. We absolutely need IA, information assurance. We need AI. We need artificial intelligence. We absolutely need it. And the more we have it, the better. Is it going to take jobs? I think a better question is it going to change us as a species? Like a better question is us as humans going to be completely changed like the phones do? Like this phone has completely changed us. Like all of us are completely different. I don't know if you realize it, but this phone, social media and phones have completely, it's changing who we are as people. Look at kids. Look at, if you are over the age of 30, look at how you behave and how your kids behave, or kids these days behave. They are completely different. They think differently. They act differently. They are completely different from when you were a kid. And the reason why is the internet and this. They grew up with the internet and this. Their entire life, they don't know a world without phones and the internet and social media. But we do. It's a better question from, is this going to take our jobs? Is this going to take our humanity? That's a better question. We're not going to be the same out of this. And there's no way out of it. It's over. Like you can't be like, oh, we should shut down open AI. That's not going to work. There's a million other open AIs currently being birthed right now. You can't put that beast back in the box. It's over. The best we can do right now is roll with it, because it's not going away. That'd be like, we need to take away the internet. It's just too bad for kids. That doesn't make sense. I mean, just, it's like the gun argument. Like, it's in the U.S., maybe in other countries, it's fine. But here, I had a conversation with my kids about it. Like, well, what if we took away the guns? I'm like, guys, you think that criminals are going to give their guns away? Is that what you think? No. If you take guns away from regular people, you know, that's not going to take the guns off the streets. They're still going to be there. So, you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't have controls in place so that crazy people don't have access to them. And same thing with AI. We should have controls in place for it. Like there should be frameworks in place to protect us from it. But sometimes those guardrails are going to be gone. Just like people can take a gun and modify it, make it an automatic weapon. Like you can take a hammer and start bashing people in the head with it. Like we just have to be more cautious. There's no way we're going to put this thing back in the box. It's over. It's over, bro. And now all we have to do, what you and I have to do is learn it as much as possible to master it. Because, I mean, just think about it logically, right? Maybe in a perfect world, you could just hit a easy button and then all the AI is gone, right? Internet's gone, guns are gone. Boom, we're magically to this paradise. Like that's not gonna happen. it's over. Like we have to roll with it and use it to our advantage, because I kind of went off on a tangent there and I apologize. And I could be wrong. I don't know anything. I'm just some normal guy. Let me see. I'm in the DMV area. DMV is DC, Maryland, Virginia. And my contract with Meta just ended. Meta is Facebook. Wow. Congratulations on working with Facebook. I want to transition to GRC. What should I do? Okay, Peter, here's my advice. Couple things. So GRC, number one, is a little different from each sector. Okay, so in the government, the GRC that you should focus on is NIST 800 and NIST Cybersecurity Framework. If you want to go into retail, the GRC is PCI DSS. That's the framework and standards that they use, the security controls that they use. Another one with an international standard that you could do that's very highly marketable is ISO 27001. That's one that you can learn. So what I'm telling you to do is start learning these things and understand how they work. One that you might be familiar with, if you start reading it, you'll realize that, oh shit, I've been using this, is CISV8. CIS, Charlie India Sierra version 8. And it'll have a breakdown of the basic security best practices and security controls that most private sector like Meta and Google are using, they use. Those are some of the top standards and frameworks that I would be knowledgeable of, because that's kind of what in GRC, what they're looking for you to know is those processes and those standards. And I'll list them in order. The ones that are most popular in the US, because every country has different ones. It focuses on different ones. But let's start from the United States. So United States, the most popular ones are going to be NIST 800 Risk Management Framework. The entire US government and even some state governments use that. NIST Cybersecurity Framework, which is used by critical infrastructure and the US government. So it's also very, very popular, used a lot. Under that one, as far as marketability is concerned, having it on your resume and knowing it, being very familiar with it, is ISO 27001, internationally known and used within the United States for international companies. And what are these things? It's just all it is like a method of putting security in an organization. And if they follow it to the T, they follow it even closely, they'll be able to get certificate, they'll be able to have a secure environment and have a very solid security infrastructure within their IT devices, a good security posture. So back to our list. So we talked about ISO, NIST 800, NIST Cybersecurity Framework. Those are two different things, by the way. ISO 27001. And after that, I would say in the healthcare industry, probably be HIPAA, which is an act. It's not really a framework, but it has a bunch of security controls that hospitals and healthcare uses, and also insurance organizations use. With that one, you've got things like HITRUST and some other standards that are attached to HIPAA. And then you have PCI DSS, which is mostly for a retail sector, and then probably some financial institutions. Speaking of financial institutions, they have Sarbanes-Oxley, also known as SOX, which has a internal security control list of things to do and some standards that you have to go by if you're a financial institution who's doing things like trading stocks or something like that. And then I think some banks use it too. So those are some of the top ones in the United States. Now, if you go to UK, if you're in overseas or something in Europe, they have something called GDPR, which is a privacy and security standard over there. I have not used that one extensively, so I don't know a lot about it, but GDPR is a big one over there. ISO 27001 is used over there quite a bit, and each country has their own version of security controls. Australia has their own, New Zealand has their own, I believe Nigeria has their own. A lot of them will be based off of or piggyback off of NIST 800 or NIST CSF or ISO 27001. So that's why I list those to the top, because if you know those, you kind of know, you're going to know a lot of all the other ones. So I hope that that helps. They want you to know the standards. Let me see here. Okay, going back to YouTube. Okay, let me see. So JB says, hello, any STIG training or course coming up in the future? I might do a video where I break down, go into greater detail about how you do STIGs. I did one a while ago. It's a pretty short video, but I wanted to do one where I do like a full hour where all I'm doing is STIG in a box. Like I take a computer on a virtual machine, and then I just start putting STIGs on it and show you like what tools you use. And I haven't done that in a while. You know, for me, I'm doing like mostly program management type secretary shit, you know what I mean? So I'm not like doing in the weeds, STIG in a box or anything, but I have done it before. And so I would like to do, something like that, but I don't have it like on my calendar. Oh, on 3 months from now, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, but that's something that I would like to do. And I get people asking. If I get enough people asking, normally I'll do something like that. Like, and STIGs is one of those things that I've been asked about. So maybe I should go ahead and open up the STIG viewer and then walk people through what's the mindset of going through all the STIGs and stuff like that. That'd be kind of fun to do. I don't have time now. That's the long answer. The short answer is no, I don't have anything planned. I don't have, there's nothing going on right now for STIGs, unfortunately. I just don't have time for it. I would like to, but no. Let me see, any other questions here? I'm gonna be getting off this thing real soon, but I appreciate everybody who's asked me questions. These questions that you guys ask, a lot of times other people have the same question. So just keep that in mind. They're very useful. You know, there's no dumb questions. People ask something, and a lot of times other people are thinking the same thing. And so that same question, that's why when I take these videos, I kind of cut it into parts, and then you'll see these videos pop up in the future where I was talking about this stuff, because it's a lot of times it's the same. People are asking the same questions over and over again. With your 401k, can you make it a Roth IRA? I got a couple of colleagues and friends of mine who went ham on the 401k and did the Roth IRA stuff and are doing really good with it. The answer is yes, by the way, you can. I'm not big on the 401k stuff. 401k is where the company, you put money into the company, and then they will take that cash, and then they will invest it in a what's called a 401k, which usually is like a bundle of different stocks. You're giving them your money, and then they're kind of managing your stock portfolio by putting it across different commodities and stocks and stuff like that. So it's not just like stocks. It can be gold. It can be international. It can be the S. I'm not smart enough to talk about this stuff, but I'm just telling you what I know. It does work, especially if you do it for a long period of time. It's really cool if the company that you work for will match you dollar for dollar. They'll say, okay, if you put a dollar in, we'll put $2 in. So you put 100 in, they put 200, another 100. It does help. It's really cool to do that. And you can keep rolling it into, like, if you go from this company to this company, you can just keep it and then roll it into another, you know. So actually, it's really cool. My company is starting this program. Are you talking about STIGs or are you talking about 401k? If your company is doing matching, then do that, because that's really, really good. I mean, it's free money, basically. It's free money. Don't pass it up. Pay attention to it and do enroll in it, whatever you got to do, and put as much money as you can in there per month, because it's actually really, it's really helpful to keep that money rolling. It's free money. Trying to start a career in governance in Canada. Canada has their own GRC program too. Canada has a, let me see, I can't remember what it's called. I remember messing with this at one point. Canada has a, it's not NIST, it's very similar to NIST 800, and I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called. It is, man, I know as soon as I see it, it's going to be like, turn on. What is it called? GRC in Canada. GRC in Canada. GRC. Oh, man. They have their own. They don't call it GRC. Call it cybersecurity program regulations is what I'm looking for. I just off the top of my head, I can't. Cybersecurity guidance. What is it called? Does anybody remember what you guys? I mean, I'm not familiar with the Canadian version of this, but I know that they have one. Thinking about getting with one of my colleagues and putting some information about it to break it all down, because they have a couple of different ones, and off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is. I apologize for that. Let me see here. Oh, ISO 27001 is used here. Oh, okay. I know that they use ISO 27001, but also there's something else, and I cannot remember what the hell it's called. Damn. I'm on their government page. I know if I see it, it'll be like, oh yeah, that's what it's, the name. It has a name. Let me see. How could you find it? Let me search for Canada. I know some people are like jumping up and down. Oh, it's called this. You know, you guys already, some people from Canada already know what I'm talking about. Oh man, it's governance. I want to say it's based off of, it's aligned with ISO 27001. And that it's also aligned with the NIST risk management framework. Canadian Center for Cybersecurity, CIBL, leads government response for cybersecurity events. It's not quite what I was talking about. Um, Let me see. Maybe it is civil. Maybe that's what it's called. What is NIST? Many Canadian businesses use ITSG-33 in place of NIST 853. Oh, now we're on the right track. That's one of them. That's the right track, but there, I think there's something more in line with the NIST 830-37 is what I'm kind of thinking of. Oh, look at this. This is really interesting. This is cool. Oh, wow. Look at this. I'm going to show this on the... So this is what I found for Canada. It says it's got NIST CSF, ISO 27001, and ITSG-33 all kind of lined up as enterprise for enterprise security. And so this might be in line with what I was talking about, ITSG. And I know there's another one, but ITSG seems like it's on the right track. ITSG. The crazy thing is each country has something like this, because each country has their own, they have their own things that they focus on, Somebody said, Canadian generally accepted accounting principles. Canadian generally accepted accounting principles. Okay. Got some Canadians jumping on here. The GAAP. Okay. Quebec has its own regulations. Okay. People are jumping at some Canadian. I got Canadians watching me. It's weird. That's just fucking weird. Yeah, that's wild. Canadian generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP, G-A-A-P. Interesting. But I did find the IT security risk management, a lifestyle approach, ITSG 33. That's also a, seems like one. I don't know if this is outdated. It says November 2012. So that could be, a little bit dated. Takes effect. Oh yeah, this looks pretty old. I don't know if this is still relevant, but this looks like in line with what I was talking about. Interesting. Every country has one. It's fascinating. Once you, and the amazing thing about all this that I recently, within the last few years, figured out was that if you know ISO 27001, if you know NIST 800, And another one's NIST risk cybersecurity framework. If you know one of those three, they're so broad in the way they're written, and they're so granular, so big, that if you know those ones, the other ones kind of fall in place, because all of it's kind of the same. It's going to be the same thing. Like, you still have to encrypt with proper cryptological modules, you know, you still have to secure your account. You still have to have identification and authentication. They all kind of have the same common body of knowledge that everyone has to do. So when you get those big frameworks like ISO 27001, it covers so much ground that it's going to hit one of those marks. It's going to hit things like what we were talking about earlier, configuration management. It's going to hit a lot of those different key notes that you need in a robust organization environment where you have a lot of IT systems or whatever. Okay, somebody asked me a question here. Let me see if I can address this one. Somebody said, I can't seem to find any IT jobs on Indeed, on LinkedIn. They need experience. Yes, experience, if without experience, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you to find these jobs. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's really difficult to find jobs I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's difficult because they really want people to hit the ground running. They really want people to know what they're doing, because a lot of times, especially the higher the level job, the more is at stake. What you can do is look in your local area for field technician, help desk job. Don't be picky in the beginning. Remember, it's a stepping stone. Field tech positions. These are keywords, by the way. Field tech positions, help desk jobs, customer service, technical customer service type jobs, those types of jobs in the beginning. Another one, your telecoms usually are hiring people to lay cable and things like that. I know this is not something that you want to do, but you got to get your foot in the door. You also want to try monster.com. So that's another place that a lot of the jobs that job opportunities I've been offered have come from monster.com. Don't just do LinkedIn. Don't just do Indeed. There's a few other ones you need to try. Career Builder, Dice, Monster. Those are the top ones that I use. Another one's CareerJet, if they still have the one out. Simply Hired is another one. I think that they take resumes. You really want to start looking in the local job market too. Your telecoms, the guys that go around and set up people's routers, you can use that as experience as well. Broaden your horizons. Remember, it's the first important first step of getting your foot in the door. Get your foot in the door. Another place to look at is wherever you happen to be working right now. Wherever you happen to be working right now has an IT department. Look there too. I know you might not want to be working with these knuckleheads or whatever, right? But you're just trying to get that first step so that you can go to the next step. Just remember that, right? Just that's your priority. Get that first foot in the door and then go to the next step. Wherever you happen to be, they have IT jobs there. So look there as well. All right. I think that's about it, guys. I've been talking for about an hour and 20 minutes, and I appreciate everybody who's chimed in and contributed to the conversation and educated me on things about Canada. I appreciate it. I don't know everything. This is just a forum for us to talk about information technology, talk about GRC stuff, and share ideas about how to get in this space, how to get your foot in the door, how to advance your career. There's way smarter guys and ladies and gentlemen here that join me every week who are chiming in, giving more advice because they have way more maturity than me. They're way more skill sets they're chiming in saying, listen, this is what you should do. So this is a community at the end of the day. This is not just about, you know, the Bruce Brown show. This is about all of us coming together, helping each other out. That's my intent for the books that I write. That's my intent for the courses that I have, the free stuff that I have, for people that I'm going to start inviting on here, is to help out people who want to level up in this community, in this field, and getting their foot in the door. And really, it's to help your family. At the end of the day, it's not about the IT. It's not about AI. It's not about GRC. It's really about helping our family and riding this wave and using it to help not only ourselves, but the people next to us. That's what this whole thing is. In my mind, that's what this whole thing is about. Now, in the beginning, it starts off as, oh, man, this is so cool. I want to get involved with this. It's so exciting. But when you get a little bit older, it's about, how do I help the guy next to me? How do I help my kids? How do I help my family? How do I help my friends? How do I help people who are asking me questions? Like, we just want to raise all the boats so we can all get this money together. All right, guys, that's it. Thank you for watching. I appreciate everybody. Let me see if I have any more questions, comments, complaints. Okay, guys, I'm out of here. I'll see you guys next week. Peace.